Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The House is paralyzed as lawmakers consider next steps following Speaker McCarthy's ouster.
I believe I can continue to fight, maybe in a different manner. I will not run for Speaker again. I'll have the conference pick somebody else.
A sudden sell-off in bonds sends rates surging and casts doubt on the prospect of an economic soft landing. And the tech giant predicting AI will have superhuman capabilities by 2030. It's Wednesday, October 4th. I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The House of Representatives is paralyzed after Speaker Kevin McCarthy was ousted yesterday in an unprecedented action. He says he won't try to reclaim the gavel, and no GOP members, including others in the leadership as well as those in the small dissident group who helped orchestrate McCarthy's exit, have indicated they want the job. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal Washington reporter Christina Peterson. Christina, what is on the immediate agenda for House lawmakers as they step into the unknown here? Is there any indication there could be any sort of quick path out of this crisis?
Well, the first step is that they're going to have to elect a new House Speaker. It's going to take a little bit of time because I don't think anyone saw how swiftly former Speaker Kevin McCarthy would be ousted, and no one knew if he would want to run again. There were all sorts of theories that potentially he could try and mount a comeback, but he said no, he is done, which opens the field up wide for House Republicans to declare their candidacy. And so I think what we'll start seeing is a lot of members tossing their names in the ring to be contenders. However, they face a very tough job. They'll have to get 218 votes on the House floor, and this House Republican conference has shown that that is not easy.
We've heard several GOP names being tossed around as possible successors to McCarthy. So who are they, and is there any clear indication that any of them are actually interested in running for the job?
House Majority Leader Steve Scalise would definitely be very high, if not the top of the list, because he's served in House leadership. He has very close relationships with many Republican lawmakers. He is currently being treated for blood cancer, but he has said that that treatment is going well. So he would definitely be a strong candidate. The Republican Study Committee Chairman, Kevin Hern, did not dismiss the idea that he might run. We're sort of in that phase where, by not immediately batting away the idea, someone is thus a contender. Conservative House Republican from Texas, Chip Roy, who has at times voted with the kind of band of rebel Republicans, but did vote in support of McCarthy, is considered a contender. And my guess is there will be many, many additional names before too long.
And do we have any indication of when the House lawmakers might begin to take up the next procedural vote to start looking for a successor for McCarthy? Will it be within days?
No, it sounds like they will be having a candidate forum next week. So there's going to be time for the various speaker candidates to make argument to House Republicans about why they think they would be the best speaker. But realistically, there's also going to have to be some real reckoning of who could actually get 218 votes, just given the huge divides that exist right now among the House GOP.
And just to be clear, right now we have an acting speaker in the form of Patrick McHenry, who was picked by McCarthy to replace him, right?
Right. I believe that McCarthy made that list when he became speaker in the event that something were to happen to him. It was not a list that was created today, is my understanding. And Congressman McHenry is a close ally of his. He was formerly the chief deputy whip, so he knows House Republicans very, very well. He's popular, well-liked. He's the current Financial Services Committee chairman. So he is serving in that kind of temporary role for the moment.
So while all this is playing out, can you also remind us the potential impact of the paralysis that we are seeing now because of this leadership crisis? What's the pressing business in Congress that's on hold as the speakership is up in the air?
This seems like a million years ago, but on Saturday, Congress did avoid a government shutdown. They passed a stopgap spending measure that keeps the government funded through November 17th. So work on reconciling where the House and Senate are on those spending levels and getting closer to a full year spending agreement is likely going to be delayed by this. There's also the question of additional aid to Ukraine. So there are a lot of really big policy matters that will probably be put on hold to some extent while the House Republicans try to sort this out.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson. Coming up, a surge in borrowing costs thanks to a sell-off in U.S. bonds has caught some investors off guard. After the break, we look at the potential risk this poses to that economic soft landing the Fed has been aiming for.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/itheroes.
Stocks have slipped in Europe and Asia this morning after a sudden sell-off in U.S. bonds yesterday pushed long-term interest rates to multi-year highs. The surge came against a backdrop of easing inflation, as well as signals that the Federal Reserve may be nearing the end of a string of rate hikes. Journal Markets editor Matthew Thomas joins me now to make sense of these latest moves. Matthew, tell us more about the sudden surge in bond rates and how much of a surprise it really was to the broader market. The stock market certainly responded unfavorably in New York yesterday.
So the surprise really came from the speed at which Treasury yields rose. The level of 10-year Treasuries, which yesterday hit a 16-year high, it broke 4.8%. So that's the highest level since August 2007. That in itself is remarkable. But it got there very quickly. There's been a big rally over the last few weeks, and that's picked up steam over the last 24 hours. And I think really it was the speed that a lot of investors in the stock market in particular were reacting to, because a quick movement in rates makes it very hard to plan financing decisions for companies. It makes it very hard for investors to think about their margin loans. It's just an extra layer of uncertainty when markets are moving that quickly.
And there seem to be a variety of reasons by analysts and other market observers as to what's triggered this particular run-up in borrowing costs?
So why Treasury yields move so quickly is the trillion-dollar question. And it's particularly interesting because the real answer is no one's sure. Yes, the US economy is still looking pretty hot, albeit with clear signs of weakness, like in home sales. But the strength of the economy doesn't explain the spike. Treasury yields should not move that quickly. It's not like the economic picture has changed dramatically overnight. Traders talk about fundamental factors being stuff like GDP growth, the inflation outlook. There are also technical factors. That's essentially supply and demand. It's how much are foreign central banks buying in the Treasury market at the moment? Has there been any exit during a particular hour of trading when maybe it's inactive for Asian buyers? It seems that technical factors are probably a big part of the explanation here, rather than any shifting picture about the US economy. But no one's really sure.
So Matthew, what sort of impact could a sustained run-up in the borrowing costs have on the prospect of a soft landing in the economy that the Federal Reserve is trying to achieve?
So the difficulty the Fed faces when it tries to engineer a soft landing is that traders are second-guessing what the Fed's going to do next. So we know that rising interest rates are going to increase borrowing costs for companies. They are going to make investments more expensive. And in particular, they are going to put pressure on mortgage rates, which is going to hurt the housing market, which frankly is already one of the worst performing parts of the economy. So this massively complicates the Fed's attempts to engineer a soft landing for the US economy. And a big reason is that although the Fed is absolutely crucial for the level of Treasury yields, it's not the only actor in the market. So this big overnight spike in yields was not a result of a Fed speech, let alone a Fed decision. It was a hard-to-read moment of market volatility. And when there's volatility like that in the markets, there's added uncertainty. And that becomes a massive complicating factor for the Fed.
That was markets editor Matthew Thomas. The largest strike in U.S. healthcare may begin today, with over 75,000 employees at the Kaiser Permanente healthcare system expected to walk out if an ongoing contract dispute isn't resolved. An announcement is expected around 9 a.m. Eastern, and if a strike is called, it would impact Kaiser workers in five states and Washington, D.C. Journal reporter Anna Hertenstein says differences over pay and staffing are at the core of the dispute.
There's a few reasons why this is happening. We still have a tight labor market, so workers are able to flex their power and demand higher pay. And we've also seen how strikes by other unions have been winning in these situations, and they've been getting public support. So workers may be motivated to bring this to their own industries. And inflation actually accelerated a bit last month. So workers are still grappling with a higher cost of living and seeing their wages get eroded. In Kaiser's contract talks, this has been a key issue. The unions say that the company's offer doesn't go far enough to offset inflation.
Major U.S. airlines are hunting for thousands of jet engine parts with fake safety certificates. Around 100 affected aircraft have already been found, leading to planes being taken out of service at American, United, and Southwest Airlines, while Delta is replacing parts. The scandal revolves around AOG Technics, a UK-based parts broker accused of falsifying safety documentation to sell to airlines. Legal action is ongoing, with a London judge ordering AOG Technics to share sales documents no later than today. A U.S. database of approvals for airline parts shows no record of AOG Technics having received approvals. A lawyer for the company has declined to comment. The New York judge presiding over Donald Trump's civil fraud trial has reprimanded him for posting a baseless rumor on social media about the judge's law clerk. The post on the former president's Truth Social platform linked the clerk to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and has since been deleted. State Supreme Court Justice Arthur Engoron has imposed a gag order that forbids the parties in the case from making public comments about his staff. In response, Trump's campaign has sent out an email calling Engoron a far-left Democrat judge. The Federal Emergency Management Agency will today test its nationwide emergency alert system at 2:20 p.m. Eastern. The test will send a message to all cell phones, TVs, and radios in the United States saying this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. The alert will also play at a unique tone and be accompanied by a vibration to increase access to those with disabilities. And Masayoshi Son, the head of Japanese tech investor SoftBank, offered up quite a head-turning forecast today. Son said that within a decade, artificial general intelligence will surpass all human knowledge, and humans should take advantage of it or risk being left behind. Markets reporter Akane Otani was at the event and says Son's enthusiasm for AI is a strong indicator of where he thinks future investment opportunities lie.
It suggests the direction that SoftBank may be taking in its future investments. Some of the companies that they may be taking a look at may have some part to do with AI, whether they're generating the chips that computers are going to need to operate these technologies, or they're more on the product side of this technology. And then second of all, it's just telling how many of the tech executives have voiced their opinions about AI. I mean, we've heard more about AI in the last year than we really have in the preceding decades. So it really tells you where the priority is in the industry.
And finally, selling coffee, or more precisely, selling foamy brown water at an 80% markup, is great business, the kind that's delivered 300 times returns to Starbucks investors over the past 4 years. But that's not enough for investors, leading Starbucks to pursue expansion in developing markets that can still create the growth that justifies its rich stock valuation. Journal Heard on the Street editor Spencer Jacob says that strategy has refocused Starbucks' attention on China, where it hopes to open one store every 9 hours over the next 3 years. Thing is, other brands smell opportunity there too.
Well, one company that seemed to be doing a fantastic job for a while is called Luckin Coffee. It went through a huge scandal, saw its number of stores decline, but it's been taken over by new management and went from being about neck and neck with Starbucks in terms of total store count to having close to twice as many stores. And then Luckin's founders last year started their own company that they claim has 5,000 outlets. And then you have KFC, which is the biggest foreign fast food chain in China. They have 9,200 KFC outlets. And they started selling coffee. They sold 180 million cups of coffee last year in China. And now they're launching their own kiosks called K-Coffee, where they just sell coffee. And so it's become a really interesting competitive market for coffee, for sure.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.